Welcome to episode number 355 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk about the top mistakes of 2014 that Trey made in his parenting. That's right. In a world where a lot of parenting experts like to talk about all the things they get it right, I found that it's valuable sometimes to stop and get real. And let's talk about some of the things that Trey absolutely screwed up in 2014 and what are some of the things that he wants to fix in 2015 and what are the things he's going to do. Plus, we're going to get a little small vignette from my beautiful wife, Corey, where she's going to give a little bit of hers as well. Not verbal face-to-face. She gave me what I'm going to report to you guys. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is February the 4th, 2014. Our topic for today is going to be the top 2014 mistakes that Trey made in his parenting. That's right. Like we mentioned in the pre-recording intro segment there, it's one thing to talk about how to get it right. But I think sometimes it is exceptionally valuable to discuss where we screwed up and where we did things wrong, because the reality is we can't change things. We can't get better if we're not willing to admit and acknowledge that there are places that need to get better. So we're going to go over some of that today. Before we do that, let's get into some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to stay notified of all the new episodes that come out here at the Family Podcast Network, jump over to thefamilypodcast.com, right-hand side. Put your name and your email address in. It's one of the most favorite ways that people love to stay up to date. We've had only two people in 3 years that have ever unsubscribed from this. So sign up for our email updates. Whenever you do that, you'll make sure that you get notified of all the new episodes that come out here at the Family Podcast Network, making sure you never miss out on that one episode. If you just could have heard it, it might have changed everything about your week. If you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode. I feel like you're getting three dimes out of every single one of these. Consider becoming a P-Tacker. That doesn't mean that you have to pay a direct three dimes every single time. We made a simple, easy way for you to do that. You go to thefamilypodcast.com, click on the Become a Member page. Whenever you do that, you can do it as simple as $5 a month. If you feel like you've got $5 that you can contribute to the cause and help them keep Family Podcast, or if it's just to say, I appreciate you, Trey, and thanks for all that you do, consider doing that. It's simple, easy. Once you sign up, it comes directly out of your account. You can stop that at any time, so don't feel like you get locked into it. You got to stick with it forever. And whenever you do that, you do get to become a P-Tacker, which gets you signed up for premium stuff available only to you guys as members. Also, if you guys have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, a show, or a topic that you want to shoot over to us, hey, let us know. We love talking about what you want to talk about. You can do that by emailing us at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also go over to our Contact Us page, which will take you to a Japkin page. You can leave a voice message right over your computer. You can also call us on your phone, 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT and the number is 0. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way today, we're going to jump into our topic, which is 2014 mistakes that Trey made. Not 2,114 mistakes or anything like that. You know, we're not going to cover that many mistakes, but we're just going to go through some of my top ones here. A couple of these are some of the things that Corey threw in the pot as well, that she wants to work on, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. You know, it was interesting. Several years ago, I was visiting with a couple of guys that they were kit plane builders, and a kit plane is literally exactly what it sounds. It's an airplane that you can build out of this little kit. You buy it. It comes in a box to your front door, and you literally can just build these little tiny planes and fly them. And they will take these little kit planes, and they'll build them up like stock cars. They'll race them against each other. And one of the things that these aviators do whenever they build these kit planes is they take a look and they look for ways that they can eliminate drag. Now, drag is a concept in physics. And basically what happens is anytime that you have a force that acts in opposite to the motion of where you're going, you create a surrounding air pocket, and that's called drag, right? So if you stick your hand out in the air, and you put it out like a blade, and you're cutting through that air, that that has almost 0% what's called form drag, right? And but if you take your hand and you rotate it flat so that you've got it almost like you're high-fiving the air that's coming at you, right, the air will loop around your hand, and it creates buffets on the backside of the hand. And that is what's called 100% form drag. And so when aviators race these planes, the design idea is that you want to reduce drag as much as possible because it creates a force in opposite. It literally is pushing on the other direction of what you want it to do, just like a caravel sail would do on the old sailing ships. And so this is the one thing they want to try to eliminate. And so what they will do is they sit there and they look at these planes. And they take a look at their design, their aerodynamics, everything from the support struts to the landing gear, and they ask themselves, how can we reduce drag as much as possible? And so they will do things as simple as, they will take the support struts, and that's what comes off the side of the airplane and holds the wings up, so that way the wings won't just fall, right? They'll take those, and normally those come in just a standard round pole, right? And what they'll do is they'll redesign those to be flat, like a wing. So that way they will cut the wind. And it's amazing that whenever you're working with stock airplanes, tiny little changes, little bitty changes that you make to little pieces like that may not make you five times faster. It may make you 1/100th faster than you were before. But the reality is this. If you are 1/100th faster than someone next to you, you're 1/100th faster, which means you can win. So their mentality is they look for all of the little tiny things that they can do to reduce drag on their airplanes. And the reality being, we don't do this as parents. We often get this idea that we've got the plane built, we've got our kit plane built as a parenting idea and an ideology and belief system, and we sit down and we start racing that plane. And maybe we're not even winning, and we know we're not winning at it, but we're going to keep doing it because it's what we do. Instead, we need to take parenting and look at it like these racers do. Bikers do this too. Bikers will look for every little single tiny way that they can drop weight or that they can create better aerodynamics on their bikes so that way they can be just a smidgen faster, because the smidgen faster is what can make the difference between you being in first place or second place. And yes, I did just say a smidgen. But that's what we have to do. That's what we need to be doing with our parenting. I wish I could tell you guys, as the guy who does this parenting podcast, I wish I could tell you that I did that in 2014. And there were some things we worked on, but there were so many goals that I had for 2015, those little modifications that I wanted to make to my parenting that I screwed up on. I did not do, I did not make. And I wanted to share those with you guys today for a couple reasons. Number one, I want to model the mentality that we've got to be open and upfront and honest about ourselves. If we're not, if we can't sit down as parents who all screw up and be honest with each other, I mean, what do we have? We'll keep living those same exact things over and over and over, expecting different results the entire time, and it will drive us insane when we can't get better results. The only way that we can get these better results is to start admitting that the results are not what I want them to be. So I've put together a little list today. I'm going to go through my top, let's see how many I got, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 here. I'm going to go through my top 7 mistakes. And again, these are a combination of Corey and mine both, but all of the ones Corey said I connected with on some level as well. So I'm going to go through those, starting out with my number one biggest mistake that I made in 2014 with my parenting was still too much freaking yelling. Now, to understand yelling, see, yelling is a tricky one because in some form, it makes us feel that we get what we want, right? When we come in and our kid's not doing what we want and we drop the hammer of Thor, you're going to get your butt to working, right? When we do that and then they get to working, it creates this illusion that yelling works. And the reality being is that it does. It does often produce results. However, you have to ask yourself on a very finite level, does yelling at a kid really convey that they are human beings? Because here's the question. Would you ever go to your business and would you ever treat one of your subordinates like that? Would you scream and yell? Now, some people out there would answer, yes, I am very congruent in how I would parent all the way to the people that I work with. Most people would answer no to that question. They would say, no, I would not treat my I would not treat my my superior that way. If my superior was screwing up, or if one of the people that I manage was screwing up, I would not yell at them. And so yelling is tricky because with our kids, it gets us those things that we want. But fundamentally, when I think we're really honest with ourselves, we have to acknowledge that when we yell at people, it is not when we are looking at them like human beings. That is a dehumanizing effect. It is an ideology of, I can't get you to do what I need you to do through relationship, so I am going to use fear. I am going to scare you into doing exactly what I want you to do. Guys, I'm horrible about this, man. I am horrible. I yell way too much at my kids to try to get them to do what I want them to do. I yell at them from across the house. I yell at them to get them to do stuff. I yell at them when they're not doing stuff. And I acknowledge that this year that yelling is one of the bigger things for me. I don't think that it's my number one major problem. I don't think it's the root of all problems. We're gonna cover some other things here later in the show here that are gonna be some of the things that I think my quote unquote need, which is not a real need at all, but my feelings of need to yell at the kids is actually produced by some other behaviors or lack thereof in this case. It's producing this, what I feel being a need to yell at the kids. So we'll cover that in a minute. So that's one of my biggest mistakes for this year. Probably the thing that I screw up the most in when it comes to my parenting is that I yell too much. Now, this next one is actually my wife, Corey's. And it's actually one of mine, too. And it's actually one of the things that links back to the number one, which was yelling. But when I asked my wife, I said, what was your number one mistake for 2014 in parenting? She goes, oh, it was that I had too short of a fuse. And what she was saying was that she wasn't patient with the kids. And whenever the kids had problems with things, or when they were fussing, or whenever they were whining, or whenever they were having, not getting to work when they needed to be getting to work, or whenever they lost something and they didn't want to find it, that she said, I got to that point to where I was blowing up too quick. Now, see, that's one of the things for me as well, because we have this tendency to, and we say this way. We say that kids, we have a short fuse when it comes to our kids. But the reality being is that I think we kind of like it that way. We want it that way in a lot of ways. We need somebody to dump our anger and our frustrations and our hurts and our pains or whatever else that's going on in our lives. And our kids are really safe people to do it, because the reality is they don't have a lot of power. They don't have the power like a full-grown adult. They don't have the power that if something is happening to them that they don't like, to go and talk to somebody and get it to stop, or to physically stop us themselves. And so in a lot of ways, I mean, the reason why do we not have longer fuses with adults at work? Number one, I think there's a societal component to it. We're told it's not okay to do that. And in some way, whether it's through complete silence or through literally confirming this, most people think it's okay to have a short fuse with our kids. But the reality being is that our kids screw up and have bad days just like us. But let me tell you, when I'm in the middle of trying to get my kids to, quote unquote, make them do something that I think that they should be doing, I have a really hard time seeing this. I see whatever else is going on, whining, crying, fussing, fighting. I don't see that maybe they had a crappy day. I had crappy days before. You know what? I don't come home and act so hot either. But for some reason, we've justified in our mind that it's okay to treat our kids like this. Even if we would never treat an employee this way, it's okay to treat our kids. Number three, this is the one that I think you guys are going to hear me say is going to kind of mix in with a couple of these other ones, but I think this is kind of the root of what's going on in my household, with the yelling and the short fuse and all that other stuff, but I haven't been playing with my kids enough. I was talking with Corey about that, saying this is probably my number one, and the reason why it's my number one is that I feel some of the deepest level of conviction about this in terms of what I should and should not be doing. I feel a deep sense of conviction that I should be playing with my kids. Now, when I say conviction, what I mean is something that has me completely and totally convinced. Sometimes I feel like I should do things, but I'm not completely and totally convinced. There's not that deep, just down in your nuggets type thing. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have that with all of these things. This is the one that I have felt a deep sense of conviction about. And it makes perfect sense to me, because play may seem like a small thing, but to a kid, it's an everything. It's where they learn about their world. It's where they explore and they play. They learn rules. I mean, even down to societal rules are learned within play. And play is so healthy and so valuable. I mean, it is the equivalent of taking your vitamins while working out and drinking your milk. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's like the super vitamins of the parenting world. When we stop and we play with our kids and we get down on their level and we enjoy our time with them and we laugh and we talk and we play and we interact and we teach and we train. All of those things happen in play. It's not just play when you get down and play with your kids. There's a deep level of connection that happens when we play with our kids. It's where interactions happen. It's where that ability to teach them when is it okay to spit and when is it not okay to spit. There's 1,000 things that get taught when we play with our kids. And let me tell you, this year, I made too many freaking excuses. Over and over and over as to why I couldn't play. I had to get these things done. Oh, God, I just had to have this work done, this, you know, right now. If I don't have this done, it's not ever going to get done. Making excuses after excuses after excuses. And I don't mean to be sappy, but there's a song that documents this, and it encapsulates the conviction that I feel deeply running in me. So I have to play it. I have to do it for you guys because it's just an iconic song in parenting that I think gives us this idea of what it is we're doing with our kids when we're not playing with them. It's Cats in the Cradle. Let me play just a little bit of that.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed and said, I'm gonna be like him, yeah. You know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then.
So I swear to you, I don't mean to go and kick you square in the feels. You know, starting out this Wednesday morning with you guys, but that's been weighing heavily on my heart. And as I retrospectively considered all these things, really, I was doing this just naturally, and I decided to make a show out of this. But as I was doing that earlier this week, I began to realize that my days of my kids craving to play with their daddy are numbered. And if I waste them on a sink of dishes, If I waste them on sitting down and relaxing when I first get home, if I waste these things, there will quickly become a day that, I mean, I will not have this anymore. Not in the same capacity as I have the honor to have it right now. And I got to do something about that. I've got to do something about that. And I feel this aching in my heart. I mean, it is literally an almost physical aching to get in the mix and to play with my kids more and to be a part of them. Because playing is where we get that interaction and we teach social skills and cueing and life lessons with our kids. And I haven't been playing enough. That kind of subsequently leads me to number four, which is I've kept myself too busy. And I mean, the reality is that I don't enjoy what my kids like to do when they play always. And some of the games I find to be awkward and uncomfortable and not fun. And so one of the things that I try to do is I keep myself too busy. I keep myself doing too many things. There's always a sink full of dishes that need to be done or I need to straighten up or I need to sit down and talk with my wife for a little while. And all of those things are important. I'm not saying that any of those things aren't valuable. But what happens is we begin to value those things more than we value spending this time with our kids. And we'll get quite adroit at making excuses. The reality is who is watching us to learn everything they're going to do in their lives? Oh, our kids are. And if our kids grow up with seeing us making excuse after excuse as to how we can't do a certain thing, I guess who's likely going to grow up to do the same thing? And this next year, I really want to focus on spending more time being less busy and recognizing that things are going to be... they're going to be more of a heavy emphasis on getting down with my kids and getting in there too much. Another one of them is that I found myself wanting more of my interaction too much. And by that, what I mean, that's kind of dovetailing the previous thing I was talking about. But I've gotten to where I'm wanting my kids to want to play or meet me on my level instead of going to theirs. Now, is there anything wrong with teaching a kid to meet people on their levels? No. But as parents, it is incumbent upon us to teach our kids to look for the needs of others. And whenever I'm doing nothing but wanting my kids to either do what I want them to do, which is, you know, lay down and watch a show with me, and they want to get up and run around, or I want to play a certain game, but they want to play another one. I did too much of that this last year. I tried to control too much of what they wanted to do, and I didn't allow them just to pick the interaction they wanted to have with me and just do it with them, because that's what they wanted. Eat at the table too little. That was another one of my big mistakes in 2014 is, you know, we moved to this homestead to Gibson and we have this beautiful, giant, large, dining room area. And we inherited just a beautiful table from my mother-in-law. And we're talking like it had multiple leaf extensions and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, chairs that can fit around it. And then we could put a bench on the other side. Or about another 4 chairs, and it's just a big, beautiful banquet-style table. And it's so wonderful, and I love this table, and we never use it. Well, let me phrase that. The kids always sit here and eat, but we almost always don't enjoy that time with our kids. And whenever we've had, you know, we call them family eating times, it's amazing how well the kids do with it and how much they love it. And we always do our sunshine and cloud. Sunshine being that thing that happened this week that really made you feel good or were comfortable, one of those comfortable emotions, you know, of fun or joy or any of those kinds of things. And then a cloud is, you know, one thing that was that wasn't all that fun. It was kind of uncomfortable in what it felt like. And, you know, we let our kids talk about that. And eating at the table is so valuable. And there is a metric butt ton of research that shows the values and the benefits of eating at the table. And there's several articles that have even shown that kids whose parents ate at the table were less likely to get involved with gang activity and drugs, etc. I mean, there's just no doubt that there is something good about the eating at the table. Now, it's not just the eating at the table that's good. I don't want to trick you into thinking that if you start eating at the table, that all things are just going to get better. Maybe, but what makes it better is the interaction that we have with our kids. These people that desire so badly to connect with us and to understand us, and in most cases, be like us, right? Just like cats in the cradle. This is their one time where they get that ability to see a you in action. And I know some of you guys out there are like, well, I mean, I don't know if my kid is doing that. Yeah, I'll guarantee you. I'll guarantee you that in some capacity, they want to see how you do life and how you handle issues and what your thoughts are about a certain thing. And they need that interaction with you to be able to get it. So I want to spend some more time looking at eating at the table with the kids this year. I didn't start date nights. This is one of the bigger failure points for me. I've always believed that the right thing to do was to set up a date night with every single one of them. And as a date night, I mean, for every single week, every single kid, we got six kids. We sit down, we take one kid out to eat, or maybe we just take them to go pick up some, you know, I worked on the car this week. We just pick one of them up and we take him into town and we have him help us buy parts for the car. Or maybe I pick one of them up and I take him out there and I have them help me build some reactive targets for shooting, right? Or whatever it is. Maybe I take my son shooting. My son loves to go shooting with daddy. Whatever it is, maybe it's sitting down and talking Minecraft. My goodness, my daughter Anna, she can talk some Minecraft. So just sitting down and taking that time, this one particular day that one kid gets an allotment of a certain amount of time that's theirs and is only theirs. And we can do and we can say or we can talk or we can go grab a soda at a little place down the road that we have, little mom and pop burger joint. Whatever it is that they want to do. I didn't start my date nights this year or last year like I wanted to. And I feel a deep sense of failure about that. And it was the one thing that I really feel strongly that I should be doing with my kids and in some capacity. Even maybe it's not once a week, maybe it's just once every 2 weeks. You know, it's really valuable, but you know, it's hard. And it is a difficult thing to get into. But I was talking with somebody just today, unrelated to parenting. I was talking with somebody today and, you know, we were talking about this concept of whenever something is important to you, you make it happen. And I was visiting with them and their argument was, well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, you know, this is important and all that stuff to me, but sometimes I just forget. And I said, let me ask you this. If I were to offer you tomorrow, this meeting that you forgot today, if I were to offer you again tomorrow, $1,000, no, $100,000 just for showing up, are you going to forget? Because they didn't like the answer to it, but I could tell in their mind that they knew what it was. The answer was no, they wouldn't forget that. Because to them, $100,000 was really important. Here's the question, and maybe this is too hard to do, I don't know. But can we get to the point to where we see our kids more important? We would go further and more beyond than we would even do for $100,000. It's a really legitimate question. Some of you guys will answer that question. Oh, absolutely. Some of you guys will stutter and kind of, you know, right? But can we get to that point? And so that's one of the things I want to start this next year is I want to spend more time having individual dates. So what I described to you guys is kind of the elephant, you know. It's just this huge, big mass of things. Yelling, too short of a fuse, not playing enough, I kept too busy, my interaction more important, didn't eat at the table and didn't start date nights, right? It's easy to look at this thing and get so overwhelmed and think, there's no way I'm going to be able to conquer this. It's too hard. And I do agree. Some of these things are going to be really difficult for me to work on. So the question then is how do you eat an elephant? Just like anything else, you do it one bite at a time. So I'm breaking mine down into what's the first thing that I want to work on. I asked Corey what was the first thing that she was going to work on. She said her biggest, most important thing is shortening the short fuse thing. She wants to lengthen her fuse. She wants to have a long level of patience before she gets to where she explodes. She's talking like not just like, you know, a little longer than the average. I mean, she wants like an excessively long one because we have a very difficult foster kid. And it creates a lot of issues, and she really wants to see that fuse grow with her. And she started that the last week, and I have been incredibly impressed with her as I've watched her not blow up. Even when I started yelling, she didn't. She stayed calm, and the kids respected her more for it. But she said she wants to learn how to bring it down and go talk to them. She brought up a brilliant point. She goes, Trey, I realized when we were going through all this that I have a tendency to yell at the kids and then I demand for them in yelling to come to me. She goes, I want to start showing my kids more respect by whenever I need them, getting up and going to them and talking. And I thought that was brilliant, incredibly insightful. Mine for it, and we're going to go ahead and wrap it up on this. Mine was not playing enough with the kids. Like I said, that's the one that I feel the deepest level of, I need to get this square now before we start anything else, I need to get this playing with the kids down and spending more time with him through play. So some of the things that I've decided is I'm going to dedicate some time when I first get home to only focus on playing with the kids. My only job, the only thing that I care about is that right there. I acknowledge, you know, now. This is, and understand, this is another piece to what I'm deciding about not playing enough. I have decided to acknowledge that it will mean there will be later nights. Because that's one of my things is, oh, I don't want a very late night tonight. I've got a podcast tonight. So I've got to get all these things done before I podcast, you know, or else it makes it harder to do then. Because it really does. Like right now, it's 12:52 a.m. On Wednesday morning, and I'm starting to feel my, what I call it, my mind getting squishy or soft. But it's when my mind stops being able to focus quite as easily as it did before. I have to go back and re-listen to what I had just put down because I couldn't remember where I was going with it. I have to do that a lot. I'm starting to get right at that point right now. And I've had to acknowledge that it may mean even more of those. But when it all comes down to brass tacks, you guys are awesome. And I appreciate and love you guys more than y'all know. But I'm sorry. I just don't love you guys as much as I love my kids. And they are more important. They are my primary. They are my thing. And I have to stay focused on what makes them successful and do well and go forward and know their daddy loves them authentically. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up with you guys right there. Those were just, again, my top mistakes in 2014. And I hope you guys enjoy. I hope you guys get to thinking. Some of these maybe you'll pick out and be like, yeah, that's one of mine too. Guys, you may add on 5, 10, 15 different ones than just these. And that's okay. You just be creative. Know yourself. And once we know ourselves and we're aware of what our issues are and where we have our weak spots, we can start growing those things to make them better. Well, all right, guys, that's all that we have in this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. You are definitely going to want to stay tuned for this Friday, where Jeff and I are going to bring back another episode of the Real Family Guys Podcast. I'm sorry for the delays in the last couple of times we've had them. Either one of us has been tired, or like last week, it was all me, man, and Jeff was ready to roll. But, man, we had sick family and kiddos were sleeping in the living room, and there was just no way we were going to get the recording done without waking everybody up. So I appreciate y'all's patience. Thank y'all so much. Stay tuned for this Friday, where Jeff and I will be ready to rock and roll. And if nothing else, we'll see you all on Friday.